Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, John. This month, we're doing some recreations and some performances and panels and so forth from the Reps 2017 Showcase. So we're highlighting that for you in case you weren't there. I hope you will be there next year, however, because you're missing a lot if you don't see it live. There's an awful lot of stuff that we can't play here. There just isn't enough time for that. But there is enough time for a Gunsmoke panel. This is called Gunsmoke Behind the Scenes. It is moderated by John and Larry Gassman. And this was recorded on Friday at the Showcase.
Okay, we've only got about 120 seats in this room. So if the people could move forward so all the people standing in the back could have a place to sit.
I don't believe that, and I am blind. Good luck. Next.
They're not really blind.
Oh, not on weekends, no.
You know, I should have known when you picked me up at the airport.
It was
that,
yes.
that was the clue.
It was, yeah, but I had a terrible time driving around looking for you.
Well, that's because your brother described you to me.
Yeah, John was navigating.
By the way, I want you to know we're the first two blind Uber drivers in the city of Seattle.
But not the last.
No, Brian's getting Lyft tomorrow.
There's my argument against unionization.
Yeah.
So we are pleased to have Larry and John Gassman presenting behind the scenes from Gunsmoke. Give it up for Larry and John.
Okay, so I'm going to have to take your words for it. This is the audience participation part of the program, except for question and answer, which comes a little later. Are the slides working?
They're out of focus? Yeah, they're great.
I can't help you with that. But they're supposed to sort of revolve. We won't pay attention to them, nor will we talk about them for the next hour. But we want you to have something else visual to look at besides us.
That's right. Because if you look at us, it's like double vision.
We're out of focus. Double focused.
Yeah. So, anyway, this is a show about Gunsmoke. Is there anybody in the room who has not heard the radio Gunsmoke? I don't see anybody's hand raised, so going to assume not.
Okay.
Most people are probably very familiar with the television Gunsmoke, which came on about 3 years after the radio show had begun, and it ran for 20 years. Where the radio show ran for 9 years. There were about 480 shows altogether. All of them, except for about three or four, are in circulation. There are about three missing that we're aware of.
A couple of more are in the Library of Congress.
Right.
By the way, we want to thank Stuart Wright, who has been a longtime friend of ours, who was here about 4 or 5 years ago for some information that he gave us. Didn't get a chance to use it all, but we used a little of it. He has written some wonderful articles about Gunsmoke. And we talked a little bit about Gunsmoke shows that are in circulation. We don't have them all yet, but we're close.
There's a great book also out about Gunsmoke, and I don't know if it's in print anymore, or you might be able to get it from a library.
I don't think so.
By Suzanne and Gabe Barabas, all about Gunsmoke. But
written, when was that, 1989 or 90?
We had them as a part of a Gunsmoke panel at the Spurdvac Old Time Radio Convention in 1984, and the book was out, I think, for a couple of years before that. So
no, not 84, it was 90.
I'm sorry, 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The panel that we used excerpts from was in 1984.
Yeah. Anyway, you might still be able to find that book. It's a great book, exhaustive in terms of its research. Gunsmoke was really the first adult Western, and it debuted April 26th of 1952 and ran until June 18th of 1961 over the CBS radio network on a number of times during the week, most of the time Saturdays, but they also had replay. Was it
repeats?
Sunday? Yeah, repeats, yeah. It was one of my top favorite radio programs, and I think most people would agree after hearing the show. They made several attempts to kind of ease into the adult Western on Escape earlier, 2-3 years earlier, but none of them took. It was just a one-show type attempt.
There were even a couple of auditions done in 1949.
Right. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, and I won't talk about it now.
This does sort of lead into things logically. Some of the remarks that you're going to hear were taken from a number of different sources, but the one that we're going to play right now came from a great NPR broadcast.
It was a six-hour documentary done.
John Hickman did all the interviewing. He interviewed just about everybody who was involved in the show, including Bill Conrad. And Bill Conrad didn't do too many interviews about radio. He didn't mind. He liked it. He loved what he loved it when he did it, but he didn't want to look back. But he did on this particular show, and it was a six-hour show called Gunsmoke Biography. And so that's where some of the information that you're going to hear came from, including this very first segment with the director of the show, beloved man Norman McDonald, who talks a little bit about how the show began and how a little bit about the early history of the Gunsmoke radio program. So let's listen right now to Norman McDonald.
Messman and I wanted to do a series called Jeff Spain, which was an offshoot of the romance episode called Pagosa of mid-1951. And we approached CBS management with it, but they said no, they were developing a Western called Gunsmoke. Harry Ackerman had the title, and he had the writers, and he had the cast in mind. They made two, if I remember correctly, two audition discs with two well-known radio actors, but neither were successful, neither got on the air. Well, despite further urgings, we couldn't move the CBS executives to put the show on. We had a week's notice to put a show together and get it on the air, and in that week we had to find a writer. We had to find a star. We had to have a theme, a Gunsmoke theme composed. So it was a busy week. We got Walter Brown Newman to come in, one of the better writers in town. We gave him an acetate disc of Pagosa, and I believe of Wild Jack Rhett, and said, this is the style, this is the color, this is the feel. We laid out no other guidelines except told him how we felt Matt Dillon should be written and the kind of character he was, and sent Walter away. That was on a Monday. There remained the problem, of course, the enormous problem of finding a star. The CBS executives, of course, were hoping for a big name. I do remember that there was a young actor from Pasadena who had some name at that time, Robert Stack. If I remember correctly, Ray Burr auditioned.
I think when they started casting for it, somebody said, good Christ, let's don't get Bill Conrad. We're up to you know where with Bill Conrad. So they did not get Bill Conrad. They auditioned everybody in town. And as a last resort, they called me and said, okay, we give up. Come on in. And I went in and read about two lines, and they said, okay, thank you. And I walked out, and the next day they called me and said, you have the job.
I think Meston and I were more enthusiastic about Conrad than the executives, because Bill was considered a heavy at that time. He'd just finished doing The Killers in feature pictures, and everybody considered him a heavy. And of course, he was a marvelous heavy. So I think the CBS executives were a little concerned that William Conrad, heavy extraordinaire, would be playing our lead, Matt Dillon. The other characters were not set, and no contracts were drawn, because nobody had yet decided who would be playing with Bill. It just developed that Howard McNair played the Doctor, who became a running character. Parley Bear played Chester, who became a running character. Georgia Ellis was in one of the first shows, but Kitty wasn't actually invented until, perhaps 8 or 10 shows into the series. I think Georgia played another saloon girl, but was not Kitty.
There were two major auditions, and then the other people read for the role. I know I've heard two of the auditions. Howard Culver, yeah,
and
played
Michael and Michael Rye
played Mark Dillon,
right,
in 1949 in June of 1949. Parley was Pilardi. He did a reading part, not necessarily for Chester, but I think he also did one for Dillon, and then John Daner also did a reading for Matt Dillon. But, of course, they chose Bill Conrad, and the rest, as they say, was history. The music was written by Rex Corey. And Rex Corey did a lot of nice radio writing of music for a number of shows. But they came to him and said, would you like the show to write the series, the music? And this was, I think, about a week, if I remember correctly,
yeah, before
the show started. And he wasn't sure what he was going to write. You know, they said, we wanted to have that Western type of flair. So he went in, and he was late for work, as I remember. He was late to get to the office, and he went in and started shaving, got done shaving, and then graduated to another spot in the bathroom.
Where you sit?
Sat down and started writing music. And about 10 minutes later, the Gunsmoke theme was done. True story, as he tells it, in this particular series. So, and it was wonderful. I mean, they released it as a recording.
The Gunsmoke Trail.
Yeah.
Tex Ritter did a version of it where it actually had words. I don't know who wrote the words.
So, great, some wonderful stories on Gunsmoke. The first show was broadcast on April 26th of 1952. And it really was a story of character development. And the voices were not quite set yet
No.
We'll hear a little bit about that right now. This, and I won't tell you what it was called for those who don't know, because it'll kind of ruin the little surprise ending. Runs about 5 minutes and 44 seconds. We'll hear cut number two right now.
Marshal's office.
Yes, ma'am, right here. I'm Marshal Dillon.
Well, I left Cottonwood as soon as I got your telegram. I'm Miss Bonnie. Where's my boy?
Oh, we have him, ma'am, safe and sound. Here, let me help you down.
Thanks.
It's a horse, Chester. Right this way, ma'am.
Oh, I'm so sorry he put you to all that trouble, Marshal. The truth of the matter is, he's a wild one, and no mistake. Takes after his father, one scrape after another.
He was no trouble at all. I enjoy children. I like to have them around. Bub, your ma's here. Son? Chester, where's the boy? Did you let him slip past you?
No, sir, Mr. Dillon. He never got past me. Look, the back door's open.
He seen me and he hightailed it, the devil.
We'll round him up for you, ma'am. Don't worry.
Oh, I don't know why I bother hauling him back. If he's run away once, he's run away 1,000 times. This time he ran because I wouldn't buy him a gun. He wanted a real one. That boy's just gun crazy, I swear. I got him a nice Barlow knife instead.
Barlow knife?
I reckon it didn't signify, and off he runs.
Barlow knife?
The kid. Chester finds that kid.
Marshal, has he done something bad with it? I told him to use it careful. He promised he'd use it carefully.
No, never mind, Chester. He's got Clay's strawberry roan. We'd never catch up to him.
Oh, I try to bring him up right. I tell him to be good, but he don't listen. He just don't listen.
Now, calm yourself, ma'am. Just calm yourself.
Here's his little bundle, Mr. Dillon.
What? Here, give it to me. That's pretty heavy. Here, you're better at knots than I am. Open it, will you?
The moment he was born, he's been nothing but tribulation to me.
Now, please, ma'am. What's he got in it, Chester?
A shirt, stockings, piece of sausage, and this.
44 double action.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon. That's Clay's gun. Sonny didn't manage to keep it long, did he?
Well, if he wants a gun that bad, he's bound to get hold of another one somewhere, somehow. Chester, call Mr. Hightower over.
Hey! Hey, Mr. Hightower!
Whoa!
Come on over. Mr. Dillon wants you.
Marshal, could I have piece of drink of water.
What? Oh, Ziegler, I forgot all about you. Chester, where are the keys?
Yeah, right there on the desk.
There we are. It'll be safe for you to go home now.
I can go back by the phone.
Yeah, that's right. I'll send for you for the trial.
Oh, Duncan should. Duncan should.
Watch where you're going, you dumb.
Excuse me.
Yes, Marshal.
Mr. Hightower, it appears that we can do business after all. Get some paper and a pencil. I want some notices printed.
Fire away.
Wanted for murder.
Wanted for murder.
What's the boy's name?
Bonnie. William Bonnie.
William Bonnie.
William Bonnie.
Age 12. Height about 5 feet. 5 feet. Hair light, eyes blue. Mm-hmm. I don't suppose he's known by any other name.
No. Everybody just called him Billy. Or the kid.
Also known as Billy. The kid.
Billy the Kid was the first show by Walter Brown Newman. Received good reports, but nobody was quite sure upstairs whether we had a hit or a miss because our leading man didn't sound like a leading man. Bill Conrad was not playing Matt as a warm, understanding, paternal figure whatsoever.
During the first few months, other writers were called in to mold the characters.
Les Crutchfield was a writer who was to become one of the solid contributors to Gunsmoke, writing possibly 70 or 80 scripts. Les wrote a writer named Herb Purdom, Joel Murcott, Lou Houston, Tony Ellis, a cross-section of the better writers in town. But each week it meant that Meston had to do a little editing and a little fixing and a little adjusting on the script. And after about a year, John said that he didn't quite know why he was working this hard and not having the fun of writing them himself. So he left CBS, left an extraordinarily good job with a great deal of promise, as a matter of fact, on what was really a gamble, because who knew how long Gunsmoke would go. So for the next 3 or 4 years, until the television series started, John wrote basically every Gunsmoke, writing anywhere between 40 and 52 scripts a year. So he was a busy man.
Now, in that particular show, we had Matt Dillon, played by Bill Conrad, from the very beginning. Chester was Parley Bear, although in the original script, they just called him Townsman. They didn't name him Chester, and Parley remembers that Bill Conrad was the one who actually named him.
He said, you can't just call him Townsman.
And Doc was Howard McNair.
He wasn't there, was he?
No, he might have been in the earlier part of the show, yeah. But he played Doc. He was a more understanding type character later on, but in the beginning, he was very bloodthirsty. Matt would say, Doc, oh good, where are the bodies, you know?
Yeah.
Good, 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 good.
Harry Bartell told us, and I think he mentioned it here as well, that he thought he had it made because in Gunsmoke, they gave him a character to play. And he figured, Mr. Hightower, great. I'll have a weekly script to get into Gunsmoke, and I'll be on it every single week. And you heard him as Hightower there, and he said he didn't play Hightower again for another year. And it was not a recurring character, unfortunately. Don Diamond was the chairman, or the person
Ziegler.
Was the Ziegler, yeah. Yeah. Vivi Janis was Billy the Kid's mother. And Billy the Kid was Dick Beals.
Right.
And he probably, I don't know who played the horse.
Right.
But I do know that Bill James, who was a Sound of X-Men, whinnied. In fact, he did it for us when we were with him in 1984 for Spirit Vax Convention.
Right.
Everybody started laughing because they all recognized the sound of that whinny.
And John Daner, of course, later came along and played a lot of bad guys, but he also, you know, in the rehearsals, you know, they'd say, oh, John, yes, Marshall. Well, that was John Daner. And those voices would appear from nowhere. They didn't even have anything to do with the script. He's just,
Somebody would yell out, "Hey, John," and they'd be in the middle of the prairie with nobody around anywhere. And you're, "Hi, Marshall." Fun stuff.
So we'll have to talk about the rehearsals a little bit later on.
Try it, if we have a chance.
But Gunsmoke, of course, was driven by sound effects. And that's the way it's going to be here of this presentation. Let's spend some time.
How much?
Oh, about 13 minutes, actually. Okay. Because they're great. No, actually, this is a shorter clip.
Is this
clip.
A shorter one?
It's okay. Ray Kemper at our very first Spurbeck convention. It was
No, not at our convention. This is with the Baroness in 90.
Okay, you're right. I keep getting the dates mixed up.
Yes, you do.
But anyway, Ray Kemper was one of the four sound effects men responsible for Gunsmoke. And he explained at the Spurbeck convention in 1990 how the famous gunshots were created. It runs about 4 minutes and 39 seconds, so we'll hear that right now.
The gunshots on radio was a major, major problem. They had a limiter in the studio, and usually we would use a 38 or 22 with blanks in it and blast away in the studio near a microphone, and that limiter would clip the gunshot. It just, you'd hear the beginning of the gunshot and it'd clip the entire middle out, and then you'd hear the top. So it would just go pip, and that would be what you would hear. So we did that on the first couple of shows of Gunsmoke, and Norm and Tommy and I and everyone were terribly disappointed, as we always were with gunshots. So Tommy and I decided, well, it's high time that somebody did something about this. So we got an arsenal of guns and went out to Bokeh Canyon near Newhall, and complete with recording equipment, started blasting away and recording all of this stuff. We were very disappointed in the end results because we couldn't seem to get the heavy reverberation from the gunshots that one always associates with gunshots. So we wound up, of all places, at Bill Conrad's home in the Laurel Canyon Mountains, and it was perfect because his house was situated in such a way that it created almost a natural amphitheater. Now, I called the police before we started all of this because I thought, well, you know, we might set a big panic off up here. And they said, well, it's okay. Just go around to the people and tell them that what you're going to do. So we did. Tommy and I went around to all the houses nearby and said, we're going to record a bunch of gunshots, but it's blanks. Don't anybody panic. And they said, okay. So we did that. And we recorded 38s, 32, 22s, and all with different loads of blanks. The blanks, I think, in the 22s, as I recall, were long rifle with heavy loads, and the 38s were just normal blanks. I believe we even recorded a shotgun. We used that. All of this turned out beautifully. Now, we used that, the shotgun, anytime that there was a Sharps rifle or a Buffalo gun or something of that sort, for a very large gun, and we used a 45, we also recorded. We used the 45 for Matt's gun because Tommy and I both felt that the 45, or that Matt's gun, should sound bigger and meaner than anyone else's gun. And, of course, we would use the 22 for the rats. Each day that the show would come along, we would get the script the day before the show, Friday, and Tommy and I would look it over, and we would determine just exactly what series of gunshots we had to make. We would record the gunshots in that order, put cue marks on them, load them into cartridges, which were continuous cartridges. The cue marks would stop them and automatically cue up to the next series. Put them in the tape decks. We had five deck machines called McKenzie machines, and we would be at the ready with these with preset levels. The output of the tape machine would go directly into the line, thereby we could, thereby bypassing that crummy limiter that I talked to you about before. Now, by doing this for the first time on radio, we were able to create a real, true gunshot sound. And Norm was delighted, and he told us so. And so for every show after that, that's what we used, and subsequently the shots were used on many, many other shows, Have Gun Will Travel, Johnny Dollar, and so forth, and more or less became a standard of the industry. If we had to have ricochets, we had ricochets extra, and we would edit the ricochets onto the end of a shot.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the sound effects. We're going to play an example of a scene involving sound effects and gunshots. This one features Matt and Chester, who are trying to rescue Kitty from a bunch of bad guys, but a rattlesnake gets in the way. Following that clip, we'll hear an excerpt with Parley Bear, who played Chester in that scene and remembered it. He and Bob Mott and Larry and I, we appeared on a radio show called Primetime Radio.
And Jim.
Oh, you're talking about Big Broadcast.
Yeah, the Big Broadcast.
Was the announcer.
Oh, my gosh. He just passed away, and I'm blocking on his name. Walden, who am I talking about?
Jim?
No, maybe it was from the Big Broadcast.
Ed Walker, yes.
God. How did
Ed Walker was on there too, yeah, and wonderful.
All of a sudden, it just goes out of your head. Is that what's going to happen to me in another 50
when
years?
When you really get old?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, anyway, that particular interview that we talked about that we were on was in 1995, and it was done for AARP. And so they talked about radio and illustrated with Gunsmoke. So, yeah, it was on a lot of NPR stations.
Wallen, come on up here. We're both useless.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's go on, and we'll play that excerpt run for you.
He's looking at me again.
You must have moved, Chester. You must have.
I got my rifle aimed at him.
Now, you stop it. You get your finger off that trigger, and now.
Well, I can't sit here and watch that rattler strike
you. If you shoot, Kitty will die. Don't you know that?
I didn't move, Dylan. Honest, I didn't. He's looking at you now.
I'll let him look.
I love it.
I gotta do something. I can't sit here and watch this.
Wait a minute. Listen to me. I got an idea.
What?
Are you chewing?
Huh?
Are you chewing?
Oh. No, not right now, but I got a fairly fresh quid of slippery almond shirt pocket.
Okay. We'll chance it. You get that quid into your mouth, but you do it slow. Slow and as steady as you can manage it. Once you start moving your hand, don't stop. You understand? All right, go ahead.
Okay, Sherman. What for?
Well, I'll tell you when you get it in your mouth. You doing it?
Yeah, I already got my fingers in my pocket. There it is.
Oh, slow and steady now.
I'm crying. It's in the mouth now.
Oh, juice it up, Chester. Get a big mouthful.
I am.
All right. Now, I've heard you brag about how good you can spit. Can you hit that rattler from there?
Maybe.
Well, okay. Now, take your time. Make him move. Make him look at you. And then splatter him right in the eyes. Okay. Go ahead.
Snake. Hey, snake. Look. I got him. I got him, Mr. Dillon. I got him. He's leaving. There he goes. He's gone. It worked.
Oh, wonderful, man. Wonderful.
Bravo, Parley.
What acting.
That's what radio was all about.
Yeah.
I remember that scene. It was Saturday's
come to Howard McNair referred to him as Dirty Saturday because, you know, the most innocuous line, if you're headed a certain way and accompanied by rude sound effects, you could project a whole new meaning to a scene.
I must say, I do to take when the man says, juice him up good.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we were talking about how we were going to do it, you remember that old licorice penny plug?
Yeah.
That had a, it was supposed to emulate a plug of chewing tobacco.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they had this thing, and either the sound effects man or Norman or somebody had bought some. So I took a bite of that and chewed it, but where am I going to spit? Because I'm not as accurate as the script would imply. So we spread a plethora of newspapers around there, and at the dress rehearsal, we did it. I don't know why I said it, but I said, somebody better turn off the air conditioning. And Norman said, why? I said, because I don't want to spit again a wind. And when we got to the scene, there was a pause, and Bill started to snicker. And when we were recording, he said, spit again a wind? And we were gone for about 5 minutes. It was messy, and they made me pick up all the newspapers that we put around there. But
that seems only fair.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you make a mess, you clean it up. That's all.
Bob Mott, what was apt to be used for the rattlesnake sound there?
I believe at that time it was probably a tape of an actual rattlesnake.
I think it was.
So that was from 1995. Great story. And all of those guys, Bob Mott and Partly, great storytellers.
I wonder if Chester ad-libbed, snake, because it just broke me up. It was perfect for him.
It kind of reminds me. Reminds me of the Bill Cosby rotated snake.
Snake.
Yeah.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
Where the parents
are spreading that jello all over the floor.
That's right, yeah.
With lights out, yep.
Anyway, if you haven't heard that one, you should
yep.
at some
Kitty
point.
Kitty Caught. 1957 was when mm-hmm. it was
I
done
think they
in
did
June
it twice.
Or July.
Yeah.
Yeah, earlier they did it, too.
We have a long, long sound effect. I mean, clip-on sound effects. But it's so good, we just let it roll. And it involves Ray Kemper, who, of course, we had with us at the convention in 1990. And then he appeared at the Friends of Old Time Radio Convention and did a Gunsmoke show in 1991. And just before dinner, we had some time available. So Jerry Williams brought his video camera, and I had my cassette recorder at the time. And we borrowed a hotel room and sat down and talked to Ray Kemper about sound effects. And Ray had and still had the ability then. I'm not sure if he still has it. It's been a while since I've talked to him. He's got to be, well over 90 now.
Yeah, at least.
But he had the ability to describe in vivid detail sound effects and how they were created. So we just started talking about it. And we talk about a number of Gunsmoke sound effects, and so I thought it might be interesting to run that. It goes about 13:24, but really, he makes it so very interesting. So let's listen to Ray Kemper.
I never could understand why they did those auditions in 49, and yet the show didn't really get on the air until 52.
Because it took that amount of time to convince the bigwigs that this show should really go on, and really...
Wow.
You know, I mean, you had bureaucracies then, just like you do now, and it's some of them just didn't. There was a lot of fear on the upper floor about doing a show of realism. They didn't. Mm. They were afraid of it. And Norm and John Meston insisted on this being realism, realistic. And I know Norm, boy, he talked to Tommy and I, and he said, "This is going to be a realistic show, guys." And he said, "Do it right. Let's do it right. Everything." And he said, "We will take all the time necessary for sound effects." And boy, was he true to his word. One time, we walked Matt Dillon along the boardwalk, crossed the street into the Long Branch, and then he had to come back out of the Long Branch and cross the street back to the boardwalk again. Well, Norm was pressed for time. And one of the few times that he said, "Ray, when you come back across the street, cut that down to about 7 steps, will you?" And I said, "Norm," I took my headsets off and I said, "Norm, It took him 23 steps to get across there. It's going to take him 23 steps to get back. And he laughed. He said, you're right. He said, damn you, do it. And he cut something else. He said, but he said, do it. And he laughed about that every time we saw each other thereafter. It was funny.
And what's wonderful is the sound effects, a lot of them are, pertain to items that are not used today in American life, like the pot-bellied stove.
Yes.
And so forth. How did you create those effects? Did you go to an actual stove?
No.
Somewhere? Or
no.
Do you remember what they sounded like, or how did you do it?
No. We had, as far as a pot-bellied stove is concerned, we had a little framed piece of wood. It was small, about 14, 18 inches wide by about the same height, and it was on a stand that you could set down.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a hole cut out of the middle of that, and then we had mounted on that an old iron door, and you could just clunk that open. It sounded exactly like an old pot-bellied stove. It was as simple as that. You just use your imagination, and you try things, and a lot of times you'd try many, many things before you found the right sound, you know.
Did you find that some things didn't sound that good when you were just testing them, but when you got them up to the mic, the sound changed?
There were...
Did the mic make that much difference is what
there
I mean
There were say. Occasions where we changed sounds during rehearsal because it didn't sound quite right, but it wasn't because the sound didn't sound right. It was because it didn't sound right with the actor or actress. And we had only been able to test it with no actor or actress. And that sometimes, strangely enough, makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone here the other day, one of the members came up to me. It was a teacher. And he said he had a high school class and he had given them a Gunsmoke tape and wanted them to listen to it because of the sound effects. And he said, now I want you to write down and note every single sound effect. But he said, don't tell me any repeats, just give me a note of the sound effects. So the kids all did that. And this he came to this one kid. He said he was 17 and he had written down pours drink, and then the next line he said pours drink, and the teacher said, no, I said don't give me repeats, and the kid said, I didn't. He said, that's different kind of liquor. And the teacher said, what? And they went back and listened to it, and sure enough he said it was. And he said, what did you do? He said one of those was pouring beer and one of them was pouring whiskey. And I said, you know, I'm amazed that anybody would pick that up. And yes, he did. And yes, we did do that. And I said, the way we did it was very simple. To pour the beer, we just took a soda pop at room temperature and poured that into a glass, because the bubbles formed by the soda pop gave it a soft sound that beer has. But the hard booze, the whiskey, you just use plain water and it has a harder sound. And the kid had picked that up, and it was really fascinating, because we didn't think anybody would ever pick that up. But we went to those ends to try and make everything perfect, you know, because we loved that show so.
What did you do for Matt's spurs?
We had a pair of spurs. They had big rowels, big stainless steel rowels on them, and of course, you don't put those on your feet when you do them, because but you hold that set of spurs in your hand, and you coordinate that with your footsteps. Mm-hmm. And so you hold the spurs up near the overhead mic, and you go ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk with each step.
And how about the riding utensils that they used? The saddles and so forth. Did you actually use real saddle
material? Oh, no.
Material?
No. The saddle squeak, which you heard often,
sure.
Was a very simple thing. That's another thing that we experimented with until we found what we wanted to get that sound. And what we wound up doing was taking a piece of a bunch of 3/16-inch mic cable, a little bigger than this black stuff here, hard, old-fashioned mic cable. We cut maybe a dozen or 15 pieces of that into 12-inch segments, and we bound tightly on two ends and once in the middle that together, and it made just a tightly bound wad of those. And then when you twist that, it's a perfect saddle squeak.
Perfect.
And that's what we used for the saddle squeak. Hmm. That was just experimentation. And that's what mostly sound effects are.
Mm-hmm. And the horses was naturally the coconut shells, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But the importance of the horses was critical. And we each had our own set of coconut shells that happened to fit our hands just right. Tommy had much smaller hands than I, so he used smaller coconut shells. The coconut shells that we used, we drilled holes on the side near the bottom, about half an inch from the bottom of each hollowed out coconut shell, half coconut shell that is, and attached a leather strap loosely from with a bolt nut on each side, so it went over the top of that coconut shell, so you could slip your fingers under that real quickly. And if you're galloping the horse, you're not going to lose your hoof, right? So otherwise, you'd get in trouble. And and the hoof box itself was about 18 inches square by about 4 inches deep, and it was filled with a mixture of dirt, sand, and very a little, but not a lot, of very fine gravel. Then that would all be mixed up. And then, just before airtime, would sprinkle it down with water. And it would give you a really good dirt sound, a nice, clean dirt sound. And if you wanted to, for instance, it was a very simple matter to go from dirt to crossing a wooden bridge or something like that. You just go from that dirt and you just come right up on the edge of that hoof box and you're on a wooden bridge, and it's a perfect sound. And then you go right back into the dirt. Or if you want to move to cement, like Straight Arrow used to do on Fury in the cave, you'd just have a little slab of cement off to the side, and you'd come from there and you'd just slide over to that cement. And you're on very hard surface, and then it echoes and it sounds real big. All kinds of ways of cheating.
Mm-hmm. How about the boardwalk?
The boardwalk was a board about 4 feet long by about 18 inches wide. It was a solid piece of 1-inch marine plywood, and around the edge of that, on the bottom side, was about a 2-inch strip of wood that with carpeted on the bottom of that strip so that it wouldn't rattle, it would settle down wherever you put it. Now, the reason for that little hollowness there is it would give you a resonance when you walked, and it was a perfect boardwalk. So that was our boardwalk.
There were several different kinds of doors. But you
used the interior.
You had, of course, Matt's office. You had the jail door. You had the doors going into the saloons.
All
of them sounding different.
Yeah, well,
maybe more doors that I'm not remembering. But
no, but I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you how that was done. Excuse me. We had one door that was on a frame that was about 4 feet high. The frame was about 4 feet tall, about 3 feet wide, and then inside that frame, and it was a regular door. Actually, it wound up being a half door. It was much bigger than what we see out here. And that whole platform was, that whole thing was built on a platform on caster, so you could wheel it from studio to studio and so forth. That had a regular old-fashioned brass handle and latch on it, door latch on it. That was the only door that we ever used for Matt's office or any other regular door. I'll tell you about the saloon and stuff in a second. The only different sound that you got from different offices or different places was the way we opened the handle. We would handle it a different way. Snap it open or give it a little extra rattle or something like that. It might sound like a different door. It was not. The bat wing doors into the Long Branch were simply... It was simply a platform about 18 inches long, about 12 inches wide, and on each end there was a solid piece of little less than 2x4, about a 2x3 that came up, hinged onto that 2x3 into the middle were two little bat wing doors. Now it was hinged with hinges, the regular hinges, bat wing hinges that went in both directions. So you would take that when you wanted to go through the bat wing door, you'd hold one and then slap the other back and forth like that, and it gave you the little rush of air, and it sounded exactly like big bat wing doors being opened. The jail door, we had a door that was about, it was all metal, solid iron. It was about 2 feet wide and about 2 feet tall. It was not much bigger than that, if that big, but about that size. It actually had steel bars, iron bars that ran down on it. So it kind of looked like a miniature jail door. And the latch itself was simply an iron bar that was bolted into one of those... bars that came down, and then there was a metal latch on the other end that held it, and you just lift that up and slap it down like you would an old-fashioned gate. And that was, we had a little handle on that, and you just rattle that and lift it up, and then if you wanted to close it, you'd go clunk, clunk, and that was the sound of the jail door.
Ray Kemper, just really terrific. I've got a couple of sound examples of those sound effects in various gun smoke scenes. There are two of them.
And then we're going to hear stories from a lot of the participants of the show as they gathered at the 1984 Spurdvat Convention.
That's right. First of these two scenes featuring sound effects takes place in which Matt is in a gunfight, and then he goes up to Doc's office to get fixed up a little bit. And just thinking of what Ray was talking about with regard to sound effects as you listen to this scene.
Looking for somebody, Marsh?
I'm looking for you.
Yeah,
Harry Dobkin.
It's against the law to slug people in Dodge.
Figured it was.
Sure. I don't suppose you'd come along to jail.
You know I won't, Marsh.
All right, go ahead and draw, Creed. It doesn't matter now.
All right, Dylan. I will.
Hey, you miss me, Creed. You hit my gun, but you miss me.
What's the matter with your neck? Bullet glance in it?
Yeah.
I could kill you easy now, Marshal.
But you won't. You couldn't brag about shooting an unarmed man.
No, I couldn't. Go get yourself another gun, Dylan.
You're fast, Creed. But you don't shoot very straight.
We'll see about that.
All right, I'll be back as soon as the doc patches me up.
Take your time. I don't mind waiting.
That was a chance shot, Creed. If you hadn't hit my gun, you'd be lying dead. Are you sure you won't come to jail?
You're wasting time, Marshal.
Yeah.
You hurt bad, Mr. Dillon?
I don't think so, Chester. But it's sure more than a flesh wound.
You know, if he'd have shot you when you was unarmed there, I'd have killed him sure.
No, I couldn't have stopped that. I'm going up to Doc's here, Chester. There's a gun in my desk drawer. Bring it up to me, will you?
Yes, sir. I'll go get it.
Thanks.
Yeah, I saw the whole business, Matt. Oh, yes, I saw it. I was just getting my things together here, and I was going to come down.
It's not too bad, Doc.
Well, come on over here now, and let me see it.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, sit down. Sit down, Matt, right here. That's it. Now, here.
Great. Now, here's another example. This is wonderful off-mic sound effects, and it involves a show called Bloody Hands, in which Matt goes out, and he has to round up seven or eight guys, and he kills all of them except one.
Larry Dobkin is in this one, too.
Right. He plays the part of Jack Brand, and in this scene, Matt and Chester are... Yeah, Brand is in jail, and Matt and Chester are asleep. They slept in the office that night, and Brand wakes them up, and we'll see what happens as we begin the episode.
Shut him up, Chester. It's hardly dawn.
Swear I'd like to throw a bucket of water on him.
Chester.
Oh, shut up, Brand. I'm coming.
I'm trying to. How about that cut yelling, Brand? What's the matter with you?
Come on over here. Just unlock this cage, Chester.
What?
I'm holding a gun on.
Where'd you get that gun?
Right next. Come on over here. I said.
He's ain't over there. He's hanging on the wall all down here.
Your own sweet pat about it.
Been
this chicken cooked long enough.
Drop it, Brand.
What?
You're not hurt. I hit the gun.
I got the keys, Mr. Dillon. I'll get his gun out of there.
All right, go ahead. Stand back, Brand.
You like to bust my hand.
You're lucky.
Lucky didn't kill me, I suppose, just like you kill everybody.
Shut up.
I got it, Mr. Dillon. It ain't no good anyway. Not now.
Where'd you get that gun, Brand?
I made it, Marshal. Don't be smart.
Oh. Wait a minute. Joe Stanger brought it to you. He tossed it to you right through those bars on the window.
I didn't know Stanger was in town.
Didn't you? Chester, get some boards and nail them over the window so nothing can get through it.
I'll fix it, Mr. Dillon. Oh, wait a minute. Marshal, that's the only window in here. You can't board it up.
You'll get enough air.
No, but it'll be dark. I don't like it dark.
Don't you? When you get it fixed, we'll go to breakfast, Chester.
It won't take long, Mr. Dillon.
All right, we do have a little bit of time for some stories from the wonderful people who did the Gunsmoke shows. This came from the 1984 convention. We had Parley Bear, Sam Edwards, Virginia Gregg, Vic Perrin, and, of course, Bill James, who was one of the sound effects men on the show. So we'll hear that. It runs about 10 minutes, and then if we have time, we'll take a couple questions.
Well, every Saturday morning, we had... donuts and coffee brought into the studio.
And who brought those donuts and coffee into the studio?
Howard McNear.
Howard McNear brought donuts and coffee every morning. No, we used to spend about an hour or so before we started reading, just kicking it around and laughing and having a good time. I think I probably had more fun on Gunsmoke next to Corliss Archer than any show I've ever worked on. It was all very, very informal, and... we had a marvelous group of people. They were all so talented. And I was very proud to have been included in the sort of little stock company that Norman McDonald had. Well, I mean, Bill Conrad, you know, always had a tendency to be overweight. So we're about the same height, maybe he's half inch taller or so. So we had a bet one time that he couldn't get into my coat within so many weeks. Well, he did it. I was amazed that he could do it without splitting the seams and the buttons. And then he started to eat again. I don't think he's ever gotten down to that weight again.
Parley?
Yes.
We got paid. And that in a time when there weren't too many regular shows on. I remember, do you remember? I'm sure you do. We all participated in it. What was it, Black Tuesday, when they cut all those shows off at CBS?
Yeah.
And the water ran deep in the foyer of CBS. And I think that, well, Gunsmoke, my gosh, that was the ultimate. That was Valhalla, so far as radio was concerned, for all of us. And it got to the point where it seemed, and happily so, that we spent more time with each other than we did with our families. Mm-hmm. Our families were pleased, and we got along well. But I tell you, if we had a good audience, but I think if anyone had started anything, we had them outnumbered, and there would have been a fight to the finish from all of us. I don't think we stopped, any of us, even those of us who passed on, came back on Saturdays to do the show. We didn't lose any of our organization, did we? We were all on there from start to finish. And you say, my greatest memory of Gunsmoke is Gunsmoke.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, have you got anything, Vic?
Oh, I'll think of something like Sam does.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Right.
Well, I just want to reiterate what Sam said, that there was no party in Hollywood, there was no affair, there was no function that could begin to compare with the fun and the joy and the kicks we got out of doing that show. And dear Howard McNear, God rest his soul, who played Doc, I've told this story before. We used to do two shows. We'd do one at 10, and then we'd break for lunch and go over to Nicodel, and then come back and do another one at 1 or 1:30.
Or 3.
Or 3. And Howard, he liked to nip a little bit. And so we would do the first show, and then he'd say, can I see the second script? Can I see the second script? Can I see the second script? And he'd thumb through it and see that, oh, I've only got that one scene. I've got 16 lines. I can have 2 martinis. And if he had a whole scene to do, he'd only have 1. But he was not quite as good company at lunch when he only had 1.
If I can interrupt just for 1 second. You know, we did one of those things, and he got tired of martinis and graduated to Bloody Marys. And I think all of us were there. He went over to Nicodel's, and he had 3 Bloody Marys because he had a little more in a bow in the second show, and he came out of there. And somebody said, you ought to have something to eat. So he ordered cinnamon toast and tea. And on the way back, he asked me if I had an Alka-Seltzer or a Maalox or something. I said, yeah, why? That damn cinnamon toast nearly killed me.
I think you better hand it over to Bill.
Yeah. You know, your perspective may be a little bit different, because rather than being in front of the mic, you were doing more with regard to sound and whatnot behind the mic.
I'd like to feel that the sound effects helped a lot, and we certainly had a lot of fun during rehearsal trying to break up the cast, and generally did.
With inappropriate sound.
Very inappropriate, yes.
Did you bring your coconuts?
I can still whinny. On cue, only though.
Oh, somebody, come on, do a
sure.
Whinny.
Sure.
Doesn't it sound like it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just wonder how many miles you walked on that boardwalk with the spurs, you know?
Keep them going, keep them going. Yeah. Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Well, I wasn't a regular on Gunsmoke, but I almost was.
Virginia Gregg.
Norman was kind of like Jack Webb in that he kept a stock company, pretty much. So I felt as though I were regular, and I'm so sorry that Georgia Ellis isn't here today. Yeah. I was hoping that she would be.
She was too.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I think we have to pay a little tribute to our guru, Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
He set the whole key. He enjoyed every bit of it as much as we did, and it was a kind of a circular thing. He would fall down laughing in the booth at the rehearsals.
Yeah.
And it just relaxed the entire cast and made everybody just feel terrific and great.
You know, was Dirty Saturday, was that unique, Gunsmoke? Did that go on in other forms of radio?
Not that way.
No.
Our degrees of dirty were unique.
It just now occurred to me why there was a stock company. They wouldn't dare call anybody else in on the show.
You know, Virginia, you said, incidentally, I'm always delighted to see you, Virginia, but never more so than today. I think had you not shown up when you did, I would have been drawn and quartered. I was not greeted with, hello, glad to see you, but where's Virginia? You were supposed to bring Virginia. And I was pacing the halls up and down, and when you loomed up on the horizon, I felt like I had found God all over again. I would not be among us now if you hadn't shown up just when you did. But Joe, you said that you weren't on every week enough to be a regular. That is untrue. Because, and I say this in all honesty, if you weren't on, you were sure thought of and talked about. Right.
Oh,
right.
Thank you. Lovely.
Well, you know, Sam and I, neither one of us was on every show, but
we didn't have running parts.
Yeah.
Name five you weren't on.
Yeah.
And I'm just sorry that Harry Bartell isn't here, because Harry and I played co-villains so frequently. And our voice range is quite similar. So whoever had the first line as the villain had his choice of the high villain or the low villain. So, if I had the first line, I'd say, well, where are you going? And he said, okay, got it.
That was one of Howard McNair's, too, on a lineup. But
oh, yeah.
We all doubled up, and I did my line, came up, and he said, ooh, you used the voice.
Yeah.
I've said this 1,000 times about Bill Conrad. He had built in a magnificent instrument that a lot of us could never quite achieve. Bill, you felt it no matter how strong he was, how mad he was, how happy he was, how sad he was. He only used about 50% of his potential. And he acted with reserve, a technique that many actors have spent a lifetime searching for. But he did, and Bill was never a spent force in anything he ever did, particularly on Gunsmoke. And it was a downright pleasure to see this man operate and work. I think, you know, we were together for so many years, and I think Virginia and these gentlemen will bear me out that if they had given us an outline on there and Bill had started the thread of conversation, I think we could all very successfully ad lib to half hour show, don't you think?
I think so.
No, there's another thing.
The rehearsals
another thing
were
about Bill.
That
he had a magnificent singing voice. He really did. Opera. He could have been a star in opera.
Meccano,
right?
Yeah.
Fiddler on the Roof last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yes.
Magnificent.
But he also sang at weddings and funerals earlier in his career.
So that's a little bit about Gunsmoke. We hope you've enjoyed the reminiscing that we've done today. I don't know if we have time for a couple of questions or not, because the next panel is coming up here. It's 9 to 4. Okay, let's do a couple, and then we will break, because they've got a. I think we have a recreation in the other room starting at 4.
So, couple any minutes, questions? Anybody got a good question?
I got one.
Okay.
The stories, yes, that was at the convention in 90. He asked about the last clip. It was performed before an audience of Spurbeck old-time radio fans at a Gunsmoke panel that we did.
No, excuse me, I was going to say the actual show.
No, it was always done on tape and done in studio and then played back.
Because my real question was, I was just curious about
What would be their feedback as far as, oh, it was so disappointing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. To our knowledge, they never had an audience, so they never saw him.
Quick question.
Okay.
Perry Bartell was on a lot of shows. Were they on all the same network?
No. Harry did stuff.
CBS, NBC, ABC, Mutual. He was all over the place. He was a very busy radio actor.
Almost as busy as Bill Conrad.
Yeah, probably so.
He was busy, but Conrad was far busier. Yeah. Conrad was in everything. That's why when he was initially going to... CBS didn't want him originally because he was in everything. And finally they said, well, okay, go ahead and audition. What he said was probably pretty close to being the truth because they weren't interested in him at first because he was on all their shows. There was a question right down here.
Yeah, quick one on Miss Kitty. You said she showed up in the 8th episode. Did they just put her in the bar to begin with?
Yeah,
yes.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. She played other parts before that, but she wasn't the running character of Kitty until I think it was 9 or 10.
I'm not sure.
And
I don't
then
know.
She was Miss Kitty, and that's all she was for the remainder
sure
of the show.
I'm not sure if that's one of the shows that's missing or not.
We'll have to look that up. Any other questions? Okay.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.